Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay. The Honorable Court of Appeals for the 2nd District of Texas is now in session.
Thank you, have a seat. We're going to hear two cases today. We're going to hear one at 10 o'clock, and following this case, we'll hear a second case, and we're going to switch to three different judges that are going to hear the second case. First case we're going to hear is the State of Texas versus Stacey Michelle Kurik. Would you call the first case, please?
May it please the court, Ms. Tanya Dahoney to argue for the state and Mr. Jim Shaw to argue for appellee.
Ms.
conduct such an exhaustive search without getting a warrant. it was relying on the fact that he had to immediately seize this person because of crime had been committed, but they didn't even know what crime.
Well, Your Honor, perhaps we may look upon the facts. This is a case where the officer stopped, he saw the car, the person was in the car, not out of the car. The person was in the car when the stop occurred. They were driving away. In fact, they chose to drive away as the officer approached the car.
He got him out of the car. At the time, he was out of the car at the time he was at the search, correct?
Yes, she was. Well, no, there was a later search. This issue in the motion to suppress and on the brief involved the initial propriety of the contact between the officer and this defendant, the initial stop of the defendant, not subsequent seizures. That's what we briefed. That was what we asked for, findings of fact and conclusions of law trial, and in fact, the law court finds reasonable suspicion for the stop.
Or so not. Then basically, any time the police are called to a scene, and someone at the scene says, there they are, that's reasonable suspicion for the detention.
That's not our facts, and I would say we depend on those facts. That's not our facts. In this situation, the dispatch relayed that there was a possible fight, which was after midnight at the north side of Fort Worth, and there was a possible fight outside a bar, PR's bar, on the north side. Don't know it. The officer arrives at the scene and finds a group of people that's consistent with the dispatch. The officer talks to a person that he believes is involved and who made the report. That's part of the findings of fact and conclusions of law by the trial court. The officer has face-to-face contact with that person. We don't know what was discussed, but that person is also in the finding that that person had a damaged vehicle. It's not proved beyond reasonable doubt that there was a fight that caused damage to a car by this defendant. We don't have that. That's not our standard in this situation. But that information was conveyed, and we do have some exigency. The man that the officer talks to says, there they are, as a group of people are in a vehicle just across the street. So the officer walks over toward that car, and at that time, that car starts to take off. And that's when the officer says, stop. That is the stop with the contested at the trial court level. And that's the initial police contact that is the subject of this appeal.
So
if that's not good contact, if anything that happened after that, obviously we'd be suppressed. So that's the
stop. Stopped from your standpoint when the officer stopped the car and initiated a conversation with the driver. So the fact that he's nervous, he's jumpy, he doesn't follow the officer's directions about keep your hands away, we're not going to consider that because the stop has already occurred. And that stop is what you want to break.
You know, Terry's kind of variety of flavors. This one to me, as I look at it, has an initial stop where the officer believes that he's trying to figure out what's happening and a call to a bar fight and then possibly criminal mischief because of the damaged vehicle.
So we have no idea the vehicle was damaged when the person arrived at the bar, and we just have no idea.
That's correct, that would again be proof beyond a reasonable doubt. The officer in this situation, much like Officer McFadden in the Terry case, which Judge Schaaf noted in reference, only had slim back. Remember, McFadden is one of those cases where actually nothing bad had happened yet. Terry allows an officer to step in before something bad happens. McFadden,
sure, I agree with Terry about that, but our standard review requires us to view these findings of fact in the light most favorable to the trial court's ruling. So if the fact that there was a damaged car can't even really claim anything because we have no idea how it was damaged or if it was damaged when the person arrived at the bar or if there's just nothing in the findings of fact to support a finding or an inference when you view it in the light most favorable to the trial court's ruling suppressing the evidence that the damage did occur on the far side.
It says that at number 6, says the unidentified person, which was the man that the officer talked to, was the owner of the damaged vehicle. It's general information, granted, but in the quantum of evidence is not beyond reasonable doubt. The quantum of evidence is not even that 50 plus a teeny tiny little bit percentage that we doesn't mean what probable cause.
But I'm talking about the standard of review, not the quantum of evidence. And the standard of review that we have to apply, that means nothing.
The standard of review that you have to apply is to apply deference to this historical fact finding that was entered by the trial judge under the judgment. And that means that this officer talked to someone who had a damaged vehicle and who he believed had reported, which that's finding fact number four, he believed had reported this fight. And so there's something going on. My latest favorite new case is the Dirschwiler opinion, which of course I cite. And that's the Court of Criminal Appeals from last year. And Dirschwiler also has what defense counsel will no doubt call vague facts. Dirschwiler involved conduct
observed by the police officer. The police officer saw the fellow driving around the parking lot at Walmart, and this was after very specific conduct had been reported, and the officer knew the officer was talking to the person who had reported the conduct. Here, the officer isn't sure this is the person who reported the conduct. For all we know, it's somebody totally different. And the officer said he thought that he had the name of the person, the unidentified person, but the trial judge didn't seem to believe that.
Well, the trial judge found in number four that Officer Bradford made contact with an unidentified person. Officer Bradford believed was the individual who called the police. It doesn't say that the officer unreasonably believed who called the police. The judge found that this is the person that officer believed called the police. That tells us that's an objective, reasonable belief, which Terry allowed, which Dirschwiler allowed. Dirschwiler's facts show the strength of this case. Dirschwiler involved conduct not observed by the police officer, but by the people who reported the crime, that was a man driving up next to them and grinning in a kind of odd, silly, strange way. Nothing more than driving up next to them at the McDonald's on a New Year's Eve and grinning strangely at them, repeatedly, making people uncomfortable. That's not really an offense, but it is what Terry is made to do. Terry allows police officers, just like a referee on a football field, to blow a whistle, call a timeout, and figure out what's going on.
What's the history of your trial? Last I heard, it's a different story in the college.
It has not been discussed, and you are correct, Judge. It was filed in July or June, and I've been trying to get a copy of that just to see it. But nonetheless, many of the principles, even if that was to change, I think actually the issue, because I know the issue, I've listened to the argument for some appeals takes on that, the issue that was hotly contested in argument was the dispatch and the validity of believing the dispatcher's information. In this situation, we have dispatched information that we can believe, and when the officer of finding fact four showed up and believed he was talking to the person who had called him in, that's where we get that inherent reliability of information from the Salo Atkins genre of cases.
But you're asking us to judge this as if we were trial judges, and we're supposed to give deference to the trial court. The trial court's determination of fact, and I mean, this is still an unidentified person, and an unidentified offense, an unidentified activity.
Wait, that means 2 minutes.
Good. Can we return to the question of when did the stop terminate?
When did the stop terminate?
Well, you want us to press because of the stop. And I want to know when did the stop begin so that we can consider what occurred before the stop. If the stop was fully followed, as I said a minute ago, there's no judging notices, not cooperating with the officer.
And I made the record, and the record is limited to it wound down to the issues contested between the parties as far as what happened when Perwick was an officer stopped the car at that point. There was a little teeny bit of testimony after that, but this was an initial contact for the assault, criminal mischief, and then subsequent Terry investigation for DWI because of the fact that there are initial officers finding the fact and conclusions of law about the driver's bloodshot body laws after the DWI Terry investigation.
Okay.
Was the search a search incident to arrest, an inventory search, a search for evidence? What was it?
This was a stop, a seizure.
The search of what?
This was a seizure of a person, and that was what was contested in the motion.
But what was the search of the car? I'm trying to figure out. Because the only, what's to be suppressed is what was found in the search of the car. That's what you don't want suppressed.
Correct. Well, and the officer's testimony was subsequent to the initial stop, because that is what goes to the intoxication as well. And so obviously, a stop of this sort involves a seizure of items that are within the reach of the defendant in line with Gantt, and then also an inventory search after that. There was not evidence relating to the details of the inventory search and the actual seizure at this hearing.
So the search of the region was an inventory search?
It was that. Many cases from the Court of Appeals on the right.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Blaine. Mr. Shaw?
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, I'm very glad to be here, as I'm sure you are today, whether for getting rid of the pleasantness. What I'd like to start with is Terry himself. But before I do that, because the record is only 123 lines long in terms of what's important, I'd like to reiterate for your benefit and anyone else that's listening. There was a dispatch made to a police officer to go to a fight outside PR's bar on the north side of Fort Worth. The officer got there, met with an individual who it's unclear whether or not he identified himself. The person yelled, "There they are, there they are." The car was leaving the scene and the officer yelled at him and stopped. Our position is, and then ultimately what the occurred was at the stop, they saw that the defendant had watery, bloodshot eyes, and that there was an odor of alcohol coming from the vehicle. So it's our point that the stop of the vehicle itself is improper. Now whether the car was going 5 miles an hour or 50 miles an hour, there was a detention, and that's what we objected.
So your position is the officers came here responding to a fight call, and individual yelling, "There they are, there they are," so just let them in?
I'm saying that, yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. There they are, there they are. What is he saying? There they are, that's the witnesses. There they are, that's the people that got beat up. There they are, that's the people that damaged my car. There they are, those are the people I don't like. Go stop them. The car was leaving, the car was driving.
Does it make any difference that if he didn't stop them right then, if he stopped to get further information from the witnesses, it's too late, they're gone.
Not too late, and they're not gone.
Well, they're leaving.
They get searched, they get an arrest warrant, they identify the people. Mm-hmm. Some.
I mean, the car is driving off, how does it know if you can get an arrest warrant?
Just do the best you can, I guess. The point is that this person was moving, not fleeing from the police, not fleeing from a felony, was not escaping, was not a person that the officer saw commit an offense, is not a person that the police believed had a reasonable suspicion that there was criminal activity or suspicious activity. The police officer was called to the scene because there was a fight. Now I ask you, in the record, what time did the police officer come to the scene? It doesn't say. What time did the police officer get the call? I think it does say that. It doesn't say when he got there. It doesn't say, first of all, it doesn't say how his car was damaged. Is it a criminal mischief if you have an accident? That's not a crime. Is it criminal mischief? I mean, is it a crime for people to be fighting? Probably not necessarily. It could have been mutual combat. This was, after all, the north side of Fort Worth. No one said that Mr. The unidentified person was involved in the fight. He didn't say, "I'm the one whose car was damaged." The officer said he believed that. I'd like to talk about this if I may. articulable facts. It's a hard word to say. The court ought to pick up on the word articulated fact, because that officer could have had a lot of articulable facts that he could have presented, but in 123 lines of this very intense hearing on motion to suppress, they didn't ask the officer anything. And they could have asked him all these hearsay questions. Well, what did that person say to you? In fact, it was a motion to suppress, looking for probable cause. Hearsay is admissible. But the state fell short. I fall short a lot of times in coming to this court, and they say, you didn't do enough. The state did not do enough to show that this officer had any articulable facts. He didn't articulate them. He might have them in his head, but if he doesn't say them, they're not articulated. So, they're not on the record. And Justice Walker, I'm sorry, if you ask a question about a certain case from the Supreme Court, I'm...
Gershweiler.
That's the state's favorite most recent case. But my favorite most recent case is the Martinez case. The facts which escape me now. Where an anonymous caller called and said, hey, I just saw a person put two bicycles in the back of his truck. He made his way on down the street. Dispatch was made. The officer was looking for a blue truck. The record says that he stopped a green truck, which he said, in quotes, but it looked blue, unquote, whatever that means. The Court of Criminal Appeals said that there were not sufficient articulated facts to support this reasonable suspicion. That case is Court of Criminal Appeals, June 29, 2011. I just got it yesterday, and I don't have a copy for the court. But that's my favorite. It supports our position.
So your position would be, if the officer had gotten a call that there was a robbery occurred at the residence, and he shows up at the residence, and there's somebody standing outside the residence saying, "There you go, there you go," you just got a letter back. Which is in essence what happened here. There's a fight.
Is there a fight? When was the fight? When was the fight?
That's 5 minutes late.
But how long did it take to get there? Where was the fight? He wasn't able to corroborate anything that he'd been told. He said there's a fight. So he goes there, can't corroborate it. There they go. Who's that? Who damaged the car? What car is damaged? How was it damaged? Was an antenna broken off? Do they still have antennas on cars? I don't know. But yes. Now, there's a case that escaped from me where the people described a person in a red jumpsuit of sorts or a hoodie of some sort, and they found him about 15 minutes later. I don't have that case cited, but they determined that that was not a proper detention. Terry, this police officer, watches these three people for about 10 minutes. They're casing this store. And then Terry, Officer McFadden, goes up to Mr. Chilton, whose name we have for Chilton versus Ohio. Chilton died while search was pending, so Terry became the famous person. But McFadden went up to Terry, grabbed him by the arm, spun him around, patted him down for a gun, which Terry is something we accept over here. But if you read it, it's really... Well, I'm not on the soapbox about that.
All right, a police officer can arrest only for a misdemeanor that is committed in the officer's presence, or disturbing the peace, or for a felon.
Felon. Felon doesn't have to be committed if there's a felon escaping. I think Bart Blake came to
the... He doesn't have to see a felon committed. He has
correct.
To see a misdemeanor committed. This is a detention that the state describes as a temporary stop, only for the purposes of maintaining the status quo. What status quo do you see there?
Well,
or was it?
I don't see it as maintaining the status quo because the car was already driving. In other words, he stopped the car. Had that person just been standing there, not on their way about their own business, certainly I think the officer could have come up and said, hey, how you doing? Did you damage this car? Were you fighting? But in this case, the car was driving. What I'm saying is it doesn't matter if 5 miles an hour or 50 miles an hour, this car was stopped without probable cause and without articulable facts that support reasonable suspicion that that person was involved in the criminal activity. You're about to be involved in criminal activity. And if you want to talk about the credibility, I know that becomes an issue. Maybe credibility is such that the defendant, the man whose name the officer got, some of these cases take off on the person gave his name to the police. Well, it doesn't say this person gave his name to the police. It says this officer obtained his name. So he hasn't subjected himself necessarily to further inquiry by the police, but maybe somebody else gave his name. It's strange that he said we obtained his name rather than I got his name from the reporter, the historian himself. So this case is fails for want of detail sufficient to show reasonable suspicion. Now we have I'm differentiating this. We have a dispatch, which we know the courts are going to say that is the cumulative knowledge of the dispatcher or the police officer or whomever. So I'm not trying to limit that. Justice Meyer, in his dissent, and Dershowitz asked the same question she did, Justice Walker. Justice Meyer said, does that mean that anyone can just call the police and report a certain vehicle and then the police can stop them? Well, certainly, that doesn't mean that. But that's what Justice Meyer, our friend, says is the gist of Dershowitz. And I know y'all have an interest in Dershowitz, but I think that's the issue. Can you just say, there they are, stop that car? This young lad on the north side has no credibility established, so you have to try to establish his credibility through other means. Sometimes that's because he may have gave his name to the police. Well, there's no evidence he gave his name to the police. What we're trying to say is, because of this stop, when the police go and stop a moving vehicle, detain a person without reasonable suspicion, that's a violation of the Fourth Amendment, Article 1, Section 9 of the State Constitution.
Did the trial judge, it appears to me from reading the findings and conclusions of the record, that the trial judge was particularly concerned that the officer didn't know what offense, if any, had been either committed or threatened or that he was prevented? Is that
what
happened in the trial?
That's exactly what happened. I mean, in 123 lines, starting after the officer introduces himself, I think that's what Judge Sorrell said. But I'd like, if I may, he concludes that based upon the credibility of the officer, credibility is going to be a plus or a minus. We have to know that he meant the lack of credibility because his findings were consistent with questioning of the officer's credibility. By credibility, we're not saying he's not truthful. We're not saying he's making up things. We're saying that the credibility based upon what he knows was deficient. And for those reasons, and because he didn't know what offense had been committed, or if an offense had been committed, or if the persons were the committors of the offense. It is his determination that they lack sufficient articulable facts to justify reasonable suspicion. That's a finding of fact that he made. The findings of fact do dovetail pretty much the entire 123 lines of testimony. But I don't think he came out and said anything that's based upon the facts and the credibility of the officer. There's insufficient reasonable suspicion. I think he should be suppressed and remain suppressed. Thank you.
Thank you, Shaw. Mr. Hunter, the brother.
Your Honor, I have a couple of questions. First off, is it incorrect misstatement of the law to say that a concerned citizen, a good Samaritan, is going to the police and only have that information acted on by the authorities if they give their name? My state appeal in 1995, before this court, which I succeeded, stated the police officer never obtained the name of the person. So it was face-to-face contact. That is the salient part of the analysis. If someone goes up to the police officer, they don't have to give their name. The officer could say, what is your name? Or give me your license. Or let me take a picture of you. Or we'll have some reason to just describe the person. We're saying we're calling them later to let them know they're held accountable for the statement they gave the police. Stalo shows that's true. But don't rely on this court. Go to the United States Supreme Court. Alabama versus White, 1990. That's reasonable suspicion for a stop where it was purely anonymous tip. In fact, this record looks like the officer received the name and wrote it in his report, but that didn't come into evidence here. That does not matter. It's that face-to-face contact which imbues credibility to that person's statement to the officer. And because the officer believed that that person had made the call to dispatch, that information, unlike Martinez, which is Mr. Shaw's new favorite case, it's the book. Well, there are two cases that distinguish Churchwell, and that's the one for the appeal case.
I thought Alabama versus White, the U.S. Supreme Court suppressed the gun that someone called into the dispatch and said this person at the bus stop has a gun.
You know, it's corrected because it's Adams versus, I get two A cases that I use all the time backwards. It's Adams versus Williams.
And I was thinking about Alabama versus White during this case because it's very similar. Someone called the police and said this person at the bus stop described that they had a striped shirt,